BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
It's a bit repetitive. Yeah. The plus that song is used on two different adverts at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah, it's used for two different companies.
I ain't afraid of no Joes.
The plus Jedward done it on The X Factor.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. That was a shocker. Oh,
I never saw it. I was in Americans.
And that was the one where all the judges got together and said, you know, they've been pretty bad in the past, but on this occasion, they've done a good
job. They're trying to turn it around, yeah. Do you know the best thing about that episode of The X Factor?
Yeah.
Was that they mentioned Harmony Korine's film Gummo.
That was very funny.
Wasn't that surreal and a sort of peculiar underground and overground culture clash?
I've never heard of this film Gummo. I don't believe that it exists.
Walsh just sort of refused. His mind was scandalised by the possibility that there could have been this film
Gummo. I mean, I've never heard of it. What is it?
And Cowell was quite pleased about showing off his film knowledge, wasn't he?
People, what I know Harmony, and I got bounced to me an email of Harmony Korine's reaction to that.
Oh, yeah, what did he say?
Saying that he said that it was the highlight of his career so far. Like, genuinely.
Getting props from Cowell.
Well, just an extraordinary underground and, subculture and surculture clash.
It was very odd. It was very odd indeed.
I've never heard of it. What's this Gummo? Star Wars. You keep talking about this thing, Star Wars. What is it? I've never heard of it.
That's Louis Walsh there.
Yeah, that's good. So who suggested the Ghostbusters theme?
That was Tom Taylor, who also created the amazing song for Boggins, which you will be hearing later on in the podcast in clip form and is available now, I should think.
He's multi-talented. He never does anything wrong.
Tom Taylor, I love him so much. I would like to smell his crutch. No, I wouldn't.
Smell his crutch? So you're suggesting he uses crutches and you're going to sniff
exactly,
the crutches.
Exactly right. That's how much I like him.
That was such an uplifting, positive song. And then within a matter of seconds, you turn it into something.
What else could I have done?
Really creepy.
Tom
anything
Taylor.
Else.
I love
anything
him so
else.
Much. How would you have finished?
I want to live with him in a tiny hutch, even though we'll be squeezed close together. I'll love Tom whatever the weather. He's got lovely knees.
All right.
He cooks delicious peas.
I love that. That's brilliant.
He's devoid of fleas. He's in love with me. It didn't go so well at the end.
Tom Taylor, I love him so much. I would really like to smell his crutch.
He's only got one crutch.
I know. I'm sorry about that, listeners.
You get on well, though, because you're Captain Buckles, right? You're the peg leg Buckles.
That's true, yeah.
You haven't got a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
What with one wooden leg? Thanks. And him with his crutch. It's like the cast of Treasure Island. Make a good panto.
Exactly.
Pull down your pantos.
Now, where were we?
We should say hello.
Oh, yes. Hi, this is Adam.
Hey, this is Joe.
And it's really very nice to be with you again for the podcast, in a full, proper, fully formed podcast. Thank you once again to Andrew Collins. I can't do it now because they've confused the names.
Collins and Herrin.
Andrew Collins,
wrong way. Yeah.
Richard Herring, two people that we love and admire very much. And they did such a fantastic job filling in for us last week. And our listeners really enjoyed it. So thanks so much to those guys. Hope you'll do it again next time we're... unavailable.
Yeah, but what you're about to hear are the edited highlights of our live show every Saturday morning on BBC Six Music from 9 till noon. And the really awful bits have been taken out and the reasonable bits have been left in. So that's what lies ahead of you, like a huge, arid, limitless plain.
That's an exciting way of describing it.
Uh-oh. That was just Adam doing it. Oh.
Listen, before...
Did you have a nice couple of weeks off then, Adam?
Oh.
What did you get up to?
Well, I talk a little bit about what I got up to in this podcast. Went on a long drive.
Oh, yeah.
What else did I get? I went to the movies. I went to see An Education.
Yes, that's quite a good one, isn't it?
Very talented girl, Carey Mulligan.
Yes.
And Peter Sarsgaard being a little bit camp and British. And
very good film.
Very creepy. Loved the film. Didn't expect to like it.
Strange ending.
How about you? Were you working hard?
I went to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Did you see any movies
again
out there?
I was working pretty hard, but I squeezed in a couple of movies.
Oh.
Often at the very end of the evening, quite jet-lagged, you know, with droopy eyes, trying to keep myself awake.
Is that your buddy that you went to the movies
droopy
with?
Droopy eyes, yeah.
Oh, hello, Joe. Can we go to the movies again?
Sure, droopy eyes. I saw Paranormal Activity.
Oh, never heard of that.
What?
No.
You and your box sets. You're out of the loop.
I am totally out of the loop.
Well, do a little bit of reading about
Paranormal.
It.
I only just found out about Sherlock Holmes, directed by Guy Ritchie.
No.
Oh, my. No one told me about that. Flipping heck, Tucker.
Do you not read things anymore?
Not really. Try and avoid
you
it.
You need some more bookmarks.
I read books. I don't read magazines.
You don't read books.
I did. I read a book.
What book did you read?
Postman Always Rings Twice.
Postman Pat.
No. It was a real book.
Postman Always Rings Twice. Well, that's quite an erotic one. Is that why you read it?
Well, it's not
that. Why did
that
you read
erotic?
That?
It's from the 50s or whatever.
The film's erotic.
It was given to me by a friend. And
they roll around on the kitchen table.
It is erotic, yeah. Also, it's very,
flowery
very short.
Buns. Oh, it's very short.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done.
It was good. Anyway, listen, we're just totally rambling here. Let's get on with the podcast. Here it is!
Are you ready for the Adam and Joe podcast? Made with little nuggets from their radio show. Mildly amusing mini moments from the past. Beautifully preserved in super stereo. 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 Everybody likes it from your sister to your mother.
Do you know some people still can't tell which of us is which?
We do have a similar kind of a cadence to our voices, but you, Joe Cornish...
You? This sounds very accusatory.
...are trained... No, it's complimentary. Oh. ...are trained... A trained Radio 4 speaking...
That's true.
...presenting person.
I had 2 hours of training.
And your voice...
In 2004.
...is very even, always easily heard.
That's nice of you to say.
Whereas mine tends to fluctuate, skitter around.
People prefer your voice.
I'm not sure that's true.
Ladies think it's sexy.
You know, I was going to talk about this later on, but I was listening to the podcast in the car the other day with my beautiful wife. And over the engine noise, it was very easy to hear everything you said perfectly, beautifully, crystal clear. It was not so easy to hear a lot of what I was saying. Because when I was speaking like this in a kind of normal way, fine, everything's fine. But then when I start shouting, if I get angry about something, which does happen...
It's the exact same frequency as a car engine.
It blows out a little bit, yeah, and it starts interrupting the car engine. The wheels start shuddering. It's like when you wind the window down.
Wheels start shuddering? What, it creates a reverberative effect that...
You know, like when you wind the window down a little bit and you get a kind of Doppler effect.
Yes.
A little bit like that.
Doppler effect. Is that what it's called?
I don't know. No, Doppler effect
is like... when you know, there's a thing if you drive along an avenue in France on a sunny day and there are stroboscopic shadows that pass over your car like that.
Yeah, I do.
It can make you go a bit mental.
That's true.
Is that the Doppler effect?
I don't know.
Someone will tell us.
Yeah, someone will, one of our listeners. The other thing I sometimes do is I speak quite softly.
Ooh.
And that's totally inaudible on the podcast over the car noise.
Well, what an idiot hole you are.
This is my
How
point.
Many podcasts now? 90,000?
Something like 93.
And you've made a complete pig's ear hole of it all.
This is the thing. We've even had letters about this in the past, which I have poo-pooed.
Well, that serves you right for poo-pooing in letters.
Well, I've learned a lesson. I'm
serves you right for posting your poo-pooing.
The poo-poo came right back at me. Oh yeah, so funny. I forgot to laugh. How's your week been, Joe?
It's been all right, thanks very much.
The big thing that happened to me that got me very excited while we were away, because we've been away for a couple of weeks, in case you didn't know, was that we got a message through. We've got different agents, myself and Joe, but my agent sent a message through that got me quite excited, because usually you get a lot of requests through in the week. I mean, I get hundreds.
You do, don't
hundreds
you?
Hundreds and
Will
hundreds.
You empty this dustbin?
Yeah.
Will you empty that dustbin?
These weeds.
Why haven't you emptied
unruly
that dustbin?
Exactly. What are these crumbs doing around
what
the bread bin?
What are all those
bin?
Dustbin bags
Could
doing
you come back
around
and
that lamp
sweep
post?
Up? The children need bathing. When will you be home? That kind of thing. So it was exciting to get a message that was titled Stella McCartney Request.
Yes.
From my agent, right?
Oh, I was thinking about this the other day.
And so I thought, what the heckins? And I thought, it's going to be some, like, you know, boring PR circular or something like that. So click on the message. It's only an invitation from Stellar to turn on the lights in her Stellar shop for an invited audience of around 300 family and friends.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine the kind of family and friends that will be present at Stellar McCartney's Christmas light shop opening switching on ceremony? I mean, last year she had Peter Kay doing the honours, right? Peter Kay started by singing a couple of numbers in his Peter Kay way with Paul McCartney. The year before that, she had, I think, Matt and Dave from Little Britain. In the past, she's had the Fast Show guys turning on the lights. This is illustrious company, right? And she is asking us. So I immediately think, like, maybe there's been some mistake and someone's pulled out at the last minute. No, she was. This is a genuine ask, right? For me and Joe to do this for Stellar. And so I said, yeah, I'm up for it if Joe is. Joe wasn't up for it.
You know what? I didn't really think about it that much. All I thought about was how paralytically excruciating I would find it to stand up in front of those people and sing some Song Wars song.
Here's the thing. Probably would too.
Well, you know what? About a week later, I suddenly realised, well, maybe Paul McCartney would have been there.
Why didn't you
seriously, about a week
email?
Later, that popped into my head. But then I thought, well, is that the right motivation for doing it? Should one really do something like that just because I want to, like, schmooze with amazing
It's not a question of schmoozing.
People.
She herself is a legendary fashion designer.
Yes.
Her father happens to be one of the most influential.
Yeah, but is that the right reason to do something?
Yes!
Yes.
In this case, yes!
Yes. What would one hope to get from it?
An anecdote.
That's
to
true.
To tell your children.
Would you want to be invited? Would you want to make friends with them? What would be your fantasies the night before?
Well, obviously the fantasy is that you all get on very well in a lifelong
friendship. And then you
friendship.
Become a friend of the Stuff. McCartneys.
Yeah, exactly. That's the fantasy. But worst case scenario, it's an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
You and I humiliate ourselves.
Yes.
There's absolute silence.
Yes.
Guy Ritchie rushes over and punches you for inadvertently
Why
insulting
Stella.
Why is
that the worst case scenario? But this is an excellent scenario.
Paul McCartney is livid about how inadvertently rude we've been about Stella's latest clothing range. He runs over, lamps me in the
you
face.
You would love that.
Says that I'm never allowed to listen to a Beatles record ever again
just
in my life.
Just touching you would be amazing.
Stella McCartney starts crying and has us banned.
I tell you what would happen. We'd turn up and it would be another woman called Stella McCartney.
Yeah, who designed
and
socks.
All her friends, yeah. That's what would happen.
Here's the thing. Here's the punchline, right? Guess who they've got to replace us?
You.
Do you know?
On your own. I don't.
You don't?
No.
The Mighty Boosh.
Ah, there you go.
I mean, that's not bad, is it?
They'll be great.
Of course they'll be great. They'll be
They'll
be a lot better than we.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed she didn't go to them first. Maybe she did and they weren't able to do it. But I don't know if they are actually doing it. I don't know if they've said yes, but I probably shouldn't even be talking about any of this.
You probably shouldn't be talking about it. I'm never going to get asked again.
No, exactly. But anyway,
well, I'm sorry, man.
That's okay.
I mean, I'm going to take a lot of kicking from the listeners probably for that decision.
Yeah,
something felt a bit wonky about it.
I know, you're probably right.
I'd definitely go round to Dindin's.
Oh, would you?
Yeah, but if there's like a public show, then I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, we were going to be like kind of performing monkeys, but I would have been absolutely fine with that.
You should have done it on your own.
I offered.
I tell you what you should
do. They didn't want me on my own. They said they were after a double
There
act.
Should be some kind of stand-in for me that's who's got more chutzpah.
A big kind of
corns.
Cardboard cutout.
Yeah, that's all I do anyway.
Yeah.
No one would notice the difference.
Come on.
The Adam and Joe podcast is once again changing its name. From June of 2010, it will be known as Chatmax. Then in February 2012, Chatmax will change its name to
Conversatia.
Then 2 months later to
Inspiron.
Then to Podmax Classic within the week. However, for official business, conversation, and reference, it will be known throughout as
the Adam and Joe Podcast.
Last weekend, we went to visit some friends, and we had a long drive, me and my family, about 4 hours or something. So I loaded up. I made a compilation for the car, right? You got to do that. And burnt off a few podcasts, right, from the show. Because my wife generally doesn't get to listen because she's always doing bits and pieces with the children. She's too busy on a Saturday morning, etc. And she certainly doesn't download the podcast. So I like to keep her abreast of what I'm actually doing with my Saturday mornings. Also, it's a nice
opportunity.
So
4 hours in the car listening to yourself.
Yeah.
Chuckling along really loudly.
Wow. Here's the thing. I didn't get to chuckle along that much because she was so busy chuckling along at everything you said.
Ah, nice. Clever woman.
Right? Every single thing you said. Snorts. Sometimes there were snorts. Right? Chuckling away.
Always liked your wife.
And then, right, we get to Retro Textination on the podcast.
Yes.
She is singing along along with the flipping Retro Textination jingle that Joe done. And then throughout the rest of the day, she's singing the jingle,
yes,
like
she's
to herself.
Clever.
Wandering around
she's
the
really
house.
Bright.
Retro Textination's here. Unbelievable. And like, so a couple of times she caught herself doing it when I was looking at her, and she could see that I was actually genuinely a little bit disturbed by it. So she had to stop herself doing it, you know.
Yeah.
But she couldn't stop. It became like a problem for herself. It's ridiculous. Should we hear what she was singing?
Sure.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the bin and forgotten about.
Letting it fade out.
Yeah. It's important. You know, we should credit James Richards, the gentleman that did the piano for that.
Yeah. He didn't even do the music for that.
I didn't
my
know.
Wife.
That's pretty much down to James, any power that has.
Yeah.
But your wife, you know, she has to live with you so she can fully contextualize your comments. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Like, things are funnier and better coming from people who you don't really know the reality about.
Of course, I know.
I'm an escape for her. You're a dreadful man prison. Fleshy bars.
I am, it's true.
Mental chains.
Rolls, horizontal roll bars on my tummy. That's what I've got.
But listen, it's time for Retro Tech. What?
I was trying to switch the image from rolls of fat to a six-pack.
It's Retro Textination time. This is the part of the show where we read out your contributions to the previous week's Text the Nation subject, even though, of course, Collings and Heron were filling in for us last week. So this is a two-week-old Text the Nation. This is the Text the Nation we had about furious arguments that arise during family games.
Yeah, it's so old and confusing that I haven't got a single one.
Don't you?
No, I totally forgot to fill them out.
I've only got two.
Have you? Well, that's good.
It's brief.
Yeah.
All right, this is from Scott Innes, rhymes with Guinness. My granddad is entirely unable to admit when he's wrong. This came to a head during a Christmas game of Trivial Pursuit some years back. Asked to name the capital of Saudi Arabia, answer, Riyadh. He smiled slyly and claimed that this was a trick question. There was no capital city. He was shouted down by everyone else, but refused to accept that the answer on the card was correct. It must be out of date, he claimed. When told to stop being silly and accept it, that he'd got it wrong, he left the room and returned wielding an atlas. He leafed through it until he found the right page. There was silence for a moment before he shut the book and said, well, the atlas is wrong too.
Good
he
one.
Sat in near silence for the remainder of the night.
Good for him, man.
That's good dad behavior, isn't
it? Yeah, the atlas is wrong.
The world is wrong.
This is a stupid atlas. Out of date.
Dad,
what do you do when fact-checking needs to be done? If you're having a Barney with your wife, are you immediately on Google there?
Well, of course, technology's changed that, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Enormously over the last decade. My girlfriend tends to, boot up the laptop at the drop of a hat.
Oh, she's the one that does it?
Yeah, she'll have Wi-Fi installed in her brain as soon as it's possible.
That's what I do as well, and my wife sighs, oh, there you go, you're booting up Google, aren't you? As soon as there's any disagreement, I don't think that's the case, darling. No, I think it is. Well, let's just find out.
Yeah, well, one more, here's one more. Dear Adam and Joe, this is from Fran in Poole. My auntie has very long hair. When she used to play Monopoly with my dad and my other auntie as children, a sweep of the hair would brush all the houses and pieces off the board, and the game would have to come to an end and be declared a draw.
This is the thing I was talking about.
It's a good technique, don't you think?
Yeah, sure.
Just wipe it all off the board if you're losing. Oh, dear. Swoosh.
Now I remember, actually, although I can't credit it, there was another message from someone who got in a stake-playing Monopoly, and they got the car piece out of the box and just drove it all over the board, saying, Boy Racer! Boy Racer! Knocking all the hotels.
That's a clever idea. Do you know Ridley Scott's new film is Monopoly?
No.
The Hasbro, the company that make... I'm not sure whether they make Monopoly, but they make all those games. They've been trotting around Hollywood for the last year or so, selling all the rights, trying to develop movies out of Risk. I'm not sure whether they've got a Kaplunk one on the go yet, but it's only a matter of time. Connect but definitely
Four.
Risk is up and running.
You'll direct the Connect 4 one, right?
I'd love to direct the Connect 4 one. Wouldn't that be good? It would be a terrorist thriller. And they'd be explosive chips.
Yeah, and the explosive chips and a huge kind of Golden Gate Bridge underneath.
It would be like Die Hard 3, you know, when they're running... Because Die Hard 3 is a bit like a game show anyway. When they're running around New York.
Yes.
Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson trying to solve... who's the villain? What's his name?
Oh, Cornelius Plunkface.
What's the actor? Jeremy Irons.
Irons, yeah.
They're trying to solve his riddles. So it's like that old TV game show, 3-2-1. Uh-huh. As a kind of explosive thriller. That's what it would be like.
Very good. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Who's going to be... So he's going to get Rusty Crowe in Monopoly.
Yeah, Ridley Scott directing the Monopoly film. And there's stuff about it online, how he's saying he's going to be true to the board game. As if it's like a great novel where you have to stick to the characters. How there's going to be a man in a little car and a top hat.
And just a big walking top hat on its own and a boot.
But which city will he set it in? Because it's regional Monopoly, isn't it? Depending on where you live, you can get it for your city, right?
Yes, of course.
Answer me that.
He could set it anywhere. He could set it in space. I've got the limited edition Star Wars Monopoly that's all set in the Star Wars universe. Yeah. He could do it anywhere he wants. He could do it up his bum.
Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant.
They're fantastic.
But which one is the best?
It's Adam. I was complaining a little bit about my wife's obsession with Joe's retro Text the Nation jingle. The thing that gets me right is that I get a certain, you know, I do a lot of jingles, right? I pump out the jingles. And as I have admitted many times before on this show, and I think both of us do this, we use a lot of stuff that is supplied by GarageBand and other kind of music creating programs like Logic and stuff.
Well, because they're clearance-free loops, right?
Clearance-free loops, but not only the loops.
Anyone
sometimes
can use them.
Sometimes we sing over the prepackaged jingles that you get in there as well, right? Not that often, but every now and again. Mm. And we're always fairly upfront about it when we do. But that doesn't stop people emailing in and pointing out the fact as if they've just rumbled us Milli Vanilli style. And it drives me insane! Especially when there's also an avalanche of praise for Joe's Retro Text the Nation jingle, which is just a never-ending avalanche. And I'm kind of like caught up in the huge snowball of praise that comes in every week. And meanwhile, I get smacked in the face for doing my best to create new exciting jingle jungles for people. For example, here's something that podcast-only listeners will have heard thus far, which I created for last week's podcast while we were away. And here's a little Bowie-influenced thing that I created for it.
In a magical forest sit a couple of gnomes.
One is called Adam, the other's called Joe.
They're doing a podcast for trees and for stones.
The trees and the stones listen on headphones.
But it's not just for stones or just for trees, though of course they're the big podcast fans. It's also for Pixies and Dinosaur Jr. and other reformed indie bands. But the number one fan is the Goblin King. His name is Jared. Listen close, you can hear him sing.
Was
I love Adam and Joe. Their theatricality is so superlative. I like listening with Brian Eno. But they never read my texts or made up jokes out, even though they're amusing. So what's that about? Anyway, was a was.
bit of Bowie-based fun there. That was exclusive to our podcast last week.
So what's the idea there? Because that was framed with a point, wasn't it?
It was framed with the point that we got a message from Charlie in Godalming, right? Mm. He says, "When I listened to your new jingle, Adam, the song I heard in the background was so familiar that I spent the good part of 3 minutes trying to remember where I'd heard it. Then I remembered, as I'm a fan of the collegehumor.com website, and one of their videos had the exact same piece of music in the background. So basically," he says, "you've just taken a demo song and sung over it. Risking coming off rude here, but even though I enjoyed it, I would have expected more effort from you, Charlie Godalming."
I agree with Charlie.
Little kiss at the
little
end.
Kiss.
Little kiss. Little kiss just after the smack.
Little punishing kiss.
Little smack.
I agree with him. What are you doing? Why didn't you play the accordion yourself and the xylophone and also all the instruments? Why didn't you compose that tune, you lazy old rag bag?
Adam Buxton replies, "At the risk of overreacting here, right, and sounding a little bit defensive, I just want to clarify a couple of things for people like Charlie and Godalming. I am the Morrissey to GarageBand / Logic's Johnny Marr, okay? I do the lyrics and the singing."
You're reading this.
"For these jingles." This is my prepared
You've
statement.
This argument.
This is
down.
A prepared statement. "I do the lyrics and the singing, and the software supplies the tunes, as we've made clear on a number of occasions, including just before the Bowie song, when I said on the podcast I got it off Logic. I still spent a good few hours writing the words, singing and producing that track, as well as the other jingle jungles."
What's the producing? Go into more details about the producing.
Putting like echoes on and stuff, and layering up all the voices.
Yeah, that's
panning
producing.
Some of them
that's
to the
cool.
left.
That's
and
cool.
Panning some of them to the
yep.
right.
Yep.
Okay. "Meanwhile, let's not forget, Cornballs is getting sent backing tracks by piano geniuses for his freaking retro Text the Nation jingle. Yeah, and all he has to do is sit back and just luxuriate and rub himself in the fan mail." What's that?
Rub himself in the fan mail.
Yeah, use it as like moisturizer.
I do bathe in it.
You do, don't you? Mm. You just lie there and pour boiling water in and wait till the fan mail turns into a kind of sludgy lather, and then you wash your hair in it.
Yes.
I know you. So, you know, I don't want to read any more of these messages is what I'm saying.
You don't want anyone else to write
no.
in to complain?
No.
We could that could be a blanket policy for the program. Only praiseworthy email will get through.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a filter we could apply usefully?
Well, I mean, it seems a little undemocratic, doesn't it? But yes.
I don't know. Yes. Negative mail will be filtered out.
Filtered out, negative mail.
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And Text the Nation this week, listeners, was cleverly set up on our blog while we were away.
Yeah.
It's all about things that happen that convince you you're psychic, or friends you know who think they're psychic.
I think we said in the podcast that the title was, "I Think I'm Psychic Because."
Yeah. Now, I was doing some Twitter searching.
Uh-huh. You love that.
I like to Twitter search.
You're not actually on Twitter.
Yeah.
You just surf for references to us.
Yep. Is that strange to you?
Yeah.
Not necessarily just references to us.
Yeah.
I search all sorts of different things.
Right.
It's a good way to see what people are chit-chatting about.
Sure.
And what they're thinking.
It's like a search engine for opinion.
Yeah, but I noticed that our Text the Nation subject had caught the attention of certain psychics.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And what's the woman's name? What does the ghost programs? I think Yvette Fielding, or I don't know, maybe I was getting confused, but it seemed to me that Yvette Fielding had picked up on this.
No.
And anyway, I came away from my late night Twitter search with the impression that a lot of professional psychic bodies,
Derek Acora,
are going to be listening to this segment of the show.
Whoa.
In order to shore up their psychic beliefs.
Sure.
So is that exciting?
That is exciting. How are you on psychic abilities? Do you believe
you?
In them?
Do I believe in them?
In the power of the mind?
No.
Do you not?
No.
Not having the power of the mind?
No, I don't believe that people have a controllable psychic power.
The power of the mind?
Not
you know,
really.
If there's one X-Files type thing I do have some credence in, it's the power of the mind.
I believe in coincidence.
Right.
I believe that the subconscious is much cleverer than the conscious.
Mm.
And sometimes it throws you a bone.
Does it?
Do you know what I mean? Who was that? Snuffling at the bottom of the door. It's gone away now, whatever it was. But do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Cognitive dissonance.
Yes, you're right, of course, you're right. It's the power of suggestion mainly, isn't it? And the way your mind works, and then it works retroactively to make you think something spooky's happening.
Yeah.
But let's hear what the listeners have.
But you know
suggested.
What? I mean, this is based on a good friend of mine who reckons he's psychic, this idea, and various things happened. For instance, we were sitting on the sofa watching a televised greyhound betting channel.
Mm-hmm.
Ever seen those?
No.
You phone in and you put your bet on the digital greyhounds. And anyway, he guessed which greyhound would win.
Right.
5 times in a row.
Did he?
And while he was doing that, he was going, I'm psychic. I'm psychic. I'm psychic. I'm going to do it again. I'm okay, if it works this time, I'm definitely psychic. Oh my God, I'm psychic. I'm going to do it again. I'm psychic. And then he really couldn't let this go. And it was clear that in a bit of his brain, he really did think he... I mean, maybe he is. Maybe I'm wrong to poo-poo him.
Mm.
But he really seemed to think he was psychic. Then,
careful with the poo-poo.
A couple of weeks later, he came in to my house again and said that a friend of his had offered him a pack of cards. And he had just randomly guessed... He'd picked a card. He'd randomly guessed what it was. He got it right.
Is this Darren Brown we're talking about here?
It's not. No, this is not a professional magician man. This is a normal man that works in a cinema. So he's really...
whose brain is infected with fantasy.
And you know, it's a joke and he smiles, but you can see in his eyes that
really
somewhere deep
it.
Down, he really thinks, oh my God,
yeah,
it could be me.
I know.
So that's the kind of thing I was after.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I was talking in the podcast last week about my sister who went through a phase of thinking that she was blowing light bulbs with her mind.
I got another one. Mm-hmm. Okay, we were on holiday. I had a big argument. Me and my girlfriend had a bit of an argument on holiday. You
happens.
Know that happens. As our argument was reaching its peak, we were having an argument on a terrace overlooking a road. As the argument reached its peak...
He threw her over into the road.
No, a man on his moped just crashed right beneath us at the exact moment.
Like it was the Fury.
Like the Fury or Carrie, yeah. He just came off his bike. And it was so
energy.
As if the psychic energy had pushed him off his bike.
Yeah.
And then a little, you know, lump of my in the back of my brain was going, Carrie White, creepy Carrie!
I believe in that stuff a little bit. I think you can get psychic energy.
Do you think?
Yeah,
just the power of vibes.
The vibes.
I mean, I should add that he'd hit an oncoming car.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was just pushed off by an invisible force.
It's more prosaic, isn't it? Like, when you get arguments, that tends to make people behave irrationally in lots of other ways and pay less attention to what they should be doing. Ian in Wimbledon, he says, hi, Cornballs and Count Buckulees. Back in the 1990s, I worked on a teen mag and I was invited to a press screening of the Tom Hanks astro vehicle Apollo 13.
Mm, what a great privilege.
Yeah. It was held in a screening room at London's Planet Hollywood.
Oh.
Ooh, privilege upon privilege.
Mini hamburgers.
And was organised in conjunction with Sega, the games company, who were promoting their new Sega Saturn console at the time.
Ooh.
On entry to the cinema, guests were handed a raffle ticket, and one lucky winner would go home with a full-length and completely horrible branded leather jacket. Only 5 in the world, they reckoned. 5 too many, really. Anyway, my immediate thought on being handed the ticket was, Christ, I've won this stupid thing. I'm going to have to get up in front of this room of strangers and go up on the stage, pick up this nasty jacket, and then I'm going to go to the pub tonight, so I'll have to cart it around with me. What a pain. So this is all just as he's been handed the ticket, right?
Yeah.
So I sat down at the end of the row to ease my journey up on stage, while Matey from Sega gave us some flim-flam about how great this computer game was, blah, blah, blah. I was desperate for him to get on with it and put me out of my misery, and was halfway out of my seat when he picked the raffle ticket out. So when he read out a different number to mine, I thought, surely some mistake. I know I've won it. At that point, some other bloke on stage whispered in the guy's ear, and then the Sega man said, sorry, we'll have to draw again. He picked my number out.
Wow.
I had to carry the stupid jacket with me all night, and eventually I gave it to my uncle for Christmas. Bye! Ian from Wimbledon. So that's pretty weird. He absolutely knew it was going to happen, everything about it, and he just thought, oh, this is a done deal.
That's powerful. How do you explain that kind of thing?
Luck.
Luck. Thanks a lot. Bye!
Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe.
Ow.
The podcast. Adam and Joe.
Touch me!
Adam and Joe.
No,
Adam and Joe.
So listen, listeners, you know we love bad accents in films, right?
Yeah, boy.
We love anyone doing a foreign accent in a film in when you know it's not their real accent. It's just fun, right?
Peter Sarsgaard in An Education plays an Englishman, and it's quite off-putting because it's pretty good, his accent, but it comes out quite camp.
It's a tough thing to do, you know, and when you think about it, there must be a good living to be made if you were a kind of quite intellectual, academic voice coach to teach the creme de la creme of Hollywood's acting talent exactly how to do these accents, right?
Like some kind of voice coach.
Imagine my surprise and delight when I picked up a copy of the magazine The New Yorker, November the 9th, and it has a massive... You know The New Yorker. It's an excellent magazine. Very good. Also quite pompous and haughty,
like
which is why I like it. And it's got a huge article all about this guy called Tim Monick, and he is Hollywood's number one voice coach.
Uh-huh.
He is the man who taught Gerald Butler, who is Scottish, to speak as if he were from New York for the forthcoming film of The Bounty. He taught Shia LaBeouf, who is from Southern California, to speak as if he'd grown up on Long Island for Wall Street 2. He taught Brad Pitt to talk as if he was from Tennessee for Inglourious Basterds. Okay, not the rude word.
Yeah.
He taught Hilary Swank, that's swank, not the rude word, to speak like Amelia Earhart for her Amelia biopic.
Yeah.
He taught Leo DiCaprio to speak whatever he speaks in Gangs of New York.
Nonsense.
So this is the creme de la creme. He taught Blanchett to speak in a Russian accent for Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Wow.
So this is the guy, right?
Question is, did he... Who else has he taught? Like, did he have anything to do with Ray Winston in The Departed?
Or Don Cheadle in Ocean's 11? Yeah. I don't know. I imagine he might not have got around to Cheadle.
No.
He was busy that week. But what an article.
I've nosed it right.
You know, and they go so in depth about how he does what he does.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is perfect for Adam and I. This is amazing. And he has various techniques. For instance, he's got an extraordinary library. He records anything off of television, of anyone speaking in a funny accent. So he'll record like foreign generals on CNN and he archives them so any actor can come along and pick a particular person, base their accent on that person. But some of the other techniques he uses aren't quite so sophisticated.
Uh-huh.
Like, and I quote from the article, Monick has offerings for the eye as well as the ear. He writes an actor's lines in faux phonetic style that he made up by combining elements of actual phonetics with approximations of sounds. So basically, he writes down the phrase that the actor has to say in phonetics.
Yeah.
So that the actor doesn't even have to think. According to this guy, if you read out these weird sentences, you will just immediately have the accent, all right?
A little bit like air, hair, there.
Now, luckily, he gives various examples, which I've typed out here.
Yeah.
I'm going to hand them to you, Adam Buxton.
Okay.
You have to read them out. And we'll see whether it works, whether you say the accent right.
All right, then.
So the first line, and Adam hasn't seen these lines before.
And obviously you haven't indicated what the accent is.
Oh, I kind of have. Do you want me to fold that? Or should I fold that back so you don't know what accent that is?
Yeah.
Okay. So this first line is one of Brad Pitt's lines from Inglourious Basterds.
Okay.
So Adam's going to read this out phonetically. Flip it over.
Okay. My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain, and I'm putting together a spatial team, and I need me 8 soldiers.
Now, what's actually written on that? I mean, that's quite a long-winded one.
That's Tennessee, that accent. My name is Lieutenant Aldo Rain, and I'm putting together a spatial team, and I need me 8 soldiers.
So how's it spelled? The guy spelt it... You know, Ma is M-A-H. Lieutenant is L-O-O-T-I-N-N-U-N-T.
Lieutenant.
You know what? So he's writing it totally phonetically. Try this one. This is a line that Matt Damon used in order to sound South African in the forthcoming film Invictus.
Ah.
Yeah? So this should, if Adam reads this phonetically, he should just sound perfectly South African.
It's a Mulatry University.
It's a military. It's a military university.
Oh, mull. It's a military.
It's a military university. Try this one. This is for Gerard Butler in The Bounty. And this is supposed to make you sound like you're from New York.
Nad as miserable as Ahimehid her believe
me. Come on,
me.
Give me that one back. I can do that one. Nad as miserable as he may... Oh, no, that's impossible.
That's absolutely impossible.
No wonder these people are speaking with really bad accents.
Nad as miserable as he mehid her.
Okay, listen, this is possibly a tiny bit alienating for the listener at home because you can't see what we're seeing written down. But here's a simple one. Like, if you've got a pad and a piece of paper, if you write down the words, go a hiddens mallet, go a hiddens mallet. According to this guy, when you say go a hiddens mallet, you're saying go ahead and smell it in a South African accent.
Go a hiddens mallet. Go a hiddens mallet.
Yeah, here's another one. Here's another. This is Hollywood's top accent coach.
Air hair lair.
And here's a final one. This is another South African one. And if you write down Beck, B-E-C-K, Tusa, T-O-O-S-A, Thefri, T-H-E-F-F-R-E, Car.
Bectusa Thefrica.
Yes!
Hey, that's quite that good! Bectusa Thefrica. Bectusa Thefrica.
You're saying it with a slight... Yeah. Try saying it with no accent at all.
Bectusa Thefrica. That's quite good,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it would be possible to think of other phonetic phrases that just, without any effort, make you sound foreign?
Yeah, of course. This guy's built a whole career on it.
Isn't that good?
Well, air, hair, lair is the one that makes you sound posh, obviously, right?
Air, hair, lair.
Yeah. You write down the words.
Are there any others?
Hair and lair. Air, hair, lair.
Bektusa Thefrica.
You see, you're doing it as well. That's good. We'd like to hear any more, though, if you've got them, listeners.
Sting.
Nice to be with you, listeners. This is Adam.
Hello, this is Joe. Getting quicker, right?
Yeah, a little bit quicker.
My reactions.
There. Not like when we introduced madness at the Camden Crawl.
No, I didn't like that.
Hi, this is Adam. Hey, all right. So you guys are probably a bit bored. That was your response.
You've never forgotten that.
It was funny. It was a funny moment.
Have I told you about my never again list?
No.
Have I told you about that? I've got a list on my office wall. It says never again.
Uh-huh.
And
introduce madness
number one
at the
is introduce live bands. Number two is appear on panel shows.
Yeah.
Number three is turn on Christmas lights at Stella McCartney's shop.
Never again. You haven't done it once, though.
Yeah, I know.
You're a fool. You'll be kicking yourself one day. Absolutely kicking yourself. Or I'll be kicking
when you're off on holiday.
I'll be kicking
with the McCartneys.
Can't believe it. Anyway, have you been to church recently?
No.
When was the last time you did a bit of hymn singing?
Probably at a friend's funeral.
Because whether you're religious or not, right, once in a while you find yourself in an environment where hymns are being sung, whether it's Christmas or a wedding or a funeral or whatever the occasion happens to be. I was at an assembly at my children's school this week, and they like to sing a few hymns there and stuff. But what do you do if you're in a situation where you're completely unfamiliar with the tune of the hymn or the hymn itself? Do you do a sort of John Redwood and bluff your way through it? You remember when he was Welsh secretary and he couldn't remember the Welsh national anthem? And he was just shaking his head and kind of mumbling the words a little bit with a smile. Or do you not even bother? Like, I didn't even bother. When I heard the hymn coming on at my children's school, I just put the hymn sheet down because I thought, where do I start? There's no way.
Do you know what I do?
What?
I guess the melody and belt it out.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
No. But that would be a thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just guess it. And hell, you know, you're in a church.
Right.
So you're going to be forgiven, turn the other cheek. Just sing really loudly and guess where it's going to go. Try and predict it. There are some people that do that anyway. This is another story, but my girlfriend has a habit. If a record comes along on the radio and it's a new record and I know she's never heard it before, she'll start, la da ba ba ba, because the furniture.
My wife does that
as
well.
As if she knows how it's going to go.
Is that a lady thing?
It's a lady thing. They just love music.
They love to sing along with things, don't they?
Yeah.
The ladies.
If they don't know what it's... Do not ever come back to you.
They're just guessing where it's going to go because they just love music.
But it's definitely a similar situation in a church, and it's more sort of, revealing, isn't it? It's more exposed.
Right.
Because there's people all around you and there's an atmosphere of, you've got to conform to the ritual.
Well,
right?
I was checking out the other parents. Most of them were having a stab, it has to be said.
Was this in a church or in the school?
No, just in the assembly hall.
Okay.
The children all sang beautifully. I think they'd sung the hymn many times before, so they were all au fait with the thing. I was I didn't know where to start. I just completely bottled it. But I thought you, Joe Cornish, might like to have a go, because I got out my digital camera and I recorded a couple of verses and a chorus.
Nice.
So I have the hymn sheet here that we were given.
Adam's given me a copy of the hymn sheet.
And there'll be a couple of bars before you come in.
This is written by Graham Kendrick, who was born in 1950. What's it called, this hymn?
It is called Shine, Jesus, Shine.
Ah.
I think, and I've never heard this one before, ever. So see how you get on.
What you're expecting me to sing along as if I'm in church and you're going to play the backing track?
Exactly. We'll just do one verse in the chorus, okay? And here's the Children of Town Close School in Norwich singing.
Lord, I come to your awesome presence, from the shadows and into your radiance. By the blood I may enter your brightness. Search me, try me, consume all my darkness. Shine on me. Shine, Jesus, shine, this lamp with the Father's glory. Blaze, Spirit, blaze,
blaze.
Hearts on fire.
Are you sure this is about Jesus?
Flow, river, flow. Flood the nations with grace and mercy.
Oh, way off.
Send forth your word, Lord, and let there be light.
That's how you do it. You go for the grandstand. Very good. That was a good effort.
Thanks.
You did pretty well on there, on the whole.
That sounds slightly evangelical. It sounds very contemporary. You know, a little bit funky.
It's a nice track. It's in between there.
Flow, river, flow, flood the nations. Mm-hmm. Oh, with grace and mercy. That's all right.
Yeah.
Blaze, Spirit, blaze. Set our hearts on fire. It almost sounds too contemporary.
Sounds like Bon Jovi, doesn't it?
It just sounds like... Yeah.
God's, but no, good effort.
Sounds
there.
Like God's having a smoke and then flooding places.
No, he doesn't do that kind of thing. I can't wait to go to church with you. I think you'd do a great job.
Thanks a lot. Someone was suggesting that over Christmas, you know, obviously the Stephen phenomenon has died down a bit.
Feast of Stephen.
Become a bit tiresome. Yeah, did you read that email?
Yeah.
That this Christmas we could revive the Stephen thing, but if you're in church and you sing Good King Wenceslas.
Yeah, Good King Wenceslas. I even did a jingle for the Christmas show last year with Good King Wenceslas.
On the feast of Stephen! Yeah?
Yeah, we'll be digging that one out for Christmas
An
this
ecclesiastical
year.
Ecclesiastical Stephen.
Absolutely. Yeah, bit of credit for Lee Henman, who put together the backing track for that.
There you go. You get backing tracks sent in.
Happens once in a blue moon, doesn't it?
Only happened to me once. Twice. Three times.
Twice. Yeah. A lady.
So Text the Nation is all about psychic things that happen that make you think you're psychic. And we were trying to go for a kind of idiotic angle. People who do that in an idiotic way.
You say this, what were you imagining we were going to get?
I don't know. I thought just we'd get idiots behaving, you know, with really tenuous reasons why they were psychic. Uh-huh. But the truth is, a lot of people genuinely do.
Sure they do.
Think they're psychic.
It's a serious thing. It's
a lot of coincidences happen.
It's one of the ultimate fantasies you have when you're a child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That maybe you're psychic and you have psychic abilities. Don't you think? Like with me, it was a close thing between being bionic and being psychic.
Yes.
I very much wanted to be bionic.
But you thought you possibly were psychic. Don't have to have any visible robot parts to be psychic.
Exactly. Because I thought, I don't know if I can go through with the accident and then the reconstruction for the bionics. But psychic, you're born with that.
Premonitions? Have you ever had any premonitions?
Never.
You've never dreamt something that then happened?
Not a one.
Really?
Nothing.
Do you ever have... Because déjà vu can sometimes feed into that, can't it?
Right, when you're a bit tired.
You can think, man, I've dreamt this.
Yes, that's your mind playing tricks on you, though, isn't it?
Is it, though?
I think so.
Or is it my mind playing tricks on you?
Here's a message right now. This was posted on our blog by Joe, and he says, Dear Cornballs and Count Buckules, I was once reading the book Never Trust a Rabbit by the League of Gentlemen's Jeremy Dyson on London's The Tube. Jeremy is the one that never appears on the telly, but as a bit of a geek, I knew what he looked like. So imagine my surprise when I looked up to see the man opposite me on the tube was Jeremy Dyson. I coughed loudly and flashed the cover of his book at him, and he looked up, smiled, and he said to me, "That literally never happens." He then offered to sign the book, and we had a little chat. Sadly, this psychic story ends on a slightly sour note, as we both changed at Oxford Circus and went on the same Victoria Line platform and boarded the same northbound tube. Oh, turns out we live really close to each other now. And what could have been a nice story for both of us is a slightly creepy one for him, as he thought I'd followed him home. I had to pretend to tie my non-existent shoelaces to allow him to run away. Am I psychic? Do I win a prize?
In what way would that be psychic, though? That would be the power to attract a person you're thinking about or whose work you're consuming towards you physically.
Yeah, your aura is so powerful that
you just magnetically pull that person.
You're reading the Da Vinci Code and suddenly there's Dan Brown. He's been sucked into your universe.
Imagine.
And you can ask him questions about Tom Hanks.
That's extraordinary, isn't
it? That kind of thing.
Have you got any more?
Yes, I've got one more. Here's one from Joff in Lyme Regis.
I think it's Roland Joffe, the director of The Killing Fields.
Because then he would have put Joffles.
Joffles, of course he would.
He says, "Dear Adam and Joe, I must tell you about my psychic abilities. About 5 years ago, I was driving in my car and I put on... and put on my latest car boot purchase... the CD Ragga Greats, the Ace of Base song, All That She Wants, brackets is another baby, came on and I quickly turned it off because my girlfriend did want another baby and I didn't.
Oh, no.
Imagine my horror then when the radio kicked in and the same song was playing.
No,
in a trice, I was on the phone to Dr. Snippington and in a few weeks, I was safely neutralised. Phew, then we split up. That was the only psychic experience.
What a roller coaster
I've ever had, wow. But it was enough. That's from Joff.
Oh, God. Wow, I can't get my head around that. That's so...
1 minute it's Ace of Base, next minute it's Dr. Snippington.
I mean, that's brilliantly illustrated in the film The Tall Guy, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is quite an old film now that kids probably won't know. It's fallen out of circulation a bit, but it's Mel Smith and directed by Mel Smith, written by Richard Curtis, starring Jeff Goldblum.
Love it. And Emma Thompson.
And they fall out of love, and then every time there's a sequence where every time he turns on the radio, another love song is playing. It's quite good, but that happens quite a lot, doesn't it? I mean, that would be another good Text the Nation, like songs or bits of pop culture that you can never listen to or watch again because they bring back kind of awkward,
the memories,
or weird memories,
potent, the associations.
Or if you're having some kind of issue between you and your partner or a friend, it's weird how suddenly everything you listen to will suddenly seem to be talking about that very issue.
It all seems relevant, right?
Yeah, and sometimes in a way that like says things out loud that you don't want said.
That's the hallmark of a brilliant bit of music or film or whatever it happens to be, though, is that it absorbs all the things you bring to it,
yes.
Right? And
it's like a kind of information black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, they suck things in towards them, don't they?
It's exactly like an information black hole, Dr. Hawkins, yes.
Thank you.
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah 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 waffles. Blah 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
You can still smell him, can't you? I mean, even though he hasn't been in the studio for a while, you can still smell him.
You know, you can smell him, and there's also residue that you can see.
You can see the marks on the carpet.
We're talking about our little furry friend.
Boggins,
also,
the BBC dog.
Also, you know, he was rolling about in mud and, I think, poo, and he's wiped it over the sides of the studio.
I mean, that's one
of
the problems, isn't it? Because he's so affectionate, but it's not the affection that lingers.
It's the stink.
It's the stinkiness.
And it's the hairs as well. And he was scampering around in the rain earlier on as well. And so he scampered his paws absolutely everywhere. And earlier on, he tried to bite and lick my face.
So much stuff, I mean, and now falls off him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like he's shedding all the time, but he's so sweet.
He's absolutely charming.
He's very
it's
sweet.
It's just tricky to get close to him.
The raging debate about whether Boggins should be humanely killed.
If you're a new listener, we're just, you know, mooting that this fictional dog might be fictionally killed because, well, killed is too strong, isn't it? Like put down, terminated. Just because he, we're just not sure about the fictional quality of his fictional life.
A lot of listeners find the sound of Boggins when he does scamper into the studio absolutely nauseating and irritating. And so they would like him to be dealt with in some kind of very final way.
Luca Van Dresch has written in saying, please don't kill Boggins. He's one of the funniest additions to your show. Not that your show wouldn't be good without him, as it would still be the funniest podcast out there apart from the Ricky Gervais podcast and maybe the Answer Me This podcast. But please don't kill Boggins.
Thanks for the qualified praise there.
And here's, can I read you one more?
Sure.
We've got Ree Boggins from Thomas Stephen. And I like this one because it's really blunt. love the show, guys. Really enjoyed the place-filling Temporific podcast. But Adam, please stop doing Boggins. It's just embarrassing. Thomas Stephen.
What does he mean, doing him?
That's just really, I don't know. What does, that's a bit revolting. But that's really sort of stabby, that one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's
very,
like a little sharp verbal stiletto blade.
Instead of shaking his head and saying,
jabbed into your ribs.
Is what he's basically saying. But to put the other side of the argument, here's a message from James McConville. And he says, hello, Adam and Joe, 2 exclamation marks. Me and my 7-year-old son, Jerry, live in Detroit in the United States, where Liverpool expats, and we're normally obedient Slack Squadron members, i.e. podcast listeners. However, our elegance has been shaken to the core by High Command's order to put down Boggins, the Black Squadron mascot. So he's adopted him as a Black Squadron mascot there. My son has the official word on this. Please listen to the attached file. And this is what James sent.
I don't want Boggins to put down, or else I'm not going to listen to your show again. Bye-bye. Yeah.
That is his bye 7-year-old bye. Son, Jerry McConville, there. He's got the proper United
That's quite
States
a forceful argument, isn't it? It's would we, you know, could you put him down now that we've heard that?
A little 7-year-old, a plea from a 7-year-old
of a child.
Boy. Yeah. I mean, that's harsh, isn't it?
I've thought about it, yes.
Yes. The other thing is that the musical community, our talented musical listeners, have come out in force. I say in force. We've had 3 songs sent to us. One song is a kind of a cut-up featuring samples of Boggins set to music, which we'll put on our blog. And then we've had a couple of original compositions that have been sent to us.
Do you think it's fair to say that we're sort of surprised and excited by the quantity and level of feeling about the fictional termination of Boggins?
Well, it's a dog-loving nation, isn't it, the United Kingdom?
Yeah.
So it's not a total surprise to me.
Really?
And plus, he's very sweet.
He is very sweet, but he's also really revolting.
He's revolting.
And as much as we get an enormous amount of positive correspondence about Boggins, we get an avalanche of hate.
It is true, actually.
A tsunami lethal venom.
We don't generally try to court hatred a duo.
Like,
but
for instance, this guy Greg has listed the 10 ways he would like fictional Boggins to be fictionally killed. Did you
can't
read that?
Read that
and
out.
Some of it's so extreme I can't read it out. Number 2 is machine gun firing squad.
That's one of the more tame ones.
Number 3 is stabbed with an umbrella.
Here's a message right now, though, from Jim Stoughton. Jim's a talented illustrator. He's been in touch with the show before. And he says, dear Adam and Joe, my girlfriend and I really like Boggins. Neither of us want to hear of his death. We want him to stick around for a very long time. So I've written a song to help Boggins stay alive. It's called Save Boggins. Let's hear a few seconds of the song right now. We'll put the full thing on the blog this week, though.
Save Boggins. Everyone clap your hands. He's a lovely, slobbery creature, got a problem with his glands. Save Boggins. Everyone stomp your feet.
That's very wonderful. We played a whole thing, but we've got more clips to play you.
Exactly. We've got another song. Thank you very much indeed for that one, Jim. So that's a pro-Boggins song. And here's another pro one. I mean, so far we haven't got any
anti-Boggins song
material. This is another very moving musical plea to save the little chap from Tom Taylor, also calling himself the Barefoot Busker. And he says, dear Count Buckules and Dr. Sexy MD, many thanks for all the years of entertainative programming. You're welcome. I'm a long-time listener, first-time writer. I felt compelled to throw in my hat to the Boggins ring. I recently caught up on the last few podcasts and became painfully aware of the fracture in the psyche of the Adam and Joe show listenership.
Very true, very well put.
Yeah, Boggins is caught in the middle of a struggle beyond his comprehension. So after having a little wee...
Boggins doesn't comprehend much.
I felt as if I was a vessel for his voice. He's written Wuzza as well. I felt I was a vessel for his voice to speak through. I've composed this song in order that the issue of his impending execution may be openly explored. Thank you very much, Tom. Let's have a listen to the first verse and chorus of your song, Save Boggins.
Boggins is a doll with a number of... You got his huge sloppy nose and his four manky paws. But if you'd seen this flea-ridden mutt, you'd know that he lives for his moment shared with Adam and Joe. Don't put him down. Let him stick around. Even though his stench is quite ripe, losing him would cut like...
Is this one going to go on the blog as well?
Yeah, we'll put the whole verse
on
the blog.
Yeah, this is pretty good, this song.
It's really good. He goes into a little impression of Boggins.
Really impassioned.
Here, listen to his quick impression.
Hello. Hello, Boggins, you right?
I've done a poo in a road, and no, that's all right, don't worry about it.
That's a brilliant impression as well, and a fantastic song. Thank you so much, Tom Taylor. I checked out his music on his MySpace site, and it's very good as well.
He's a good singer.
The Barefoot Busker. And yeah, we'll put the full versions of all of those on the blog this week, so get involved. And if you want to put the case for the other side, the execution of Boggins...
Musically. That would be interesting. Doesn't that one switch around at the end?
Oh,
the one we just heard, yeah. If you listen through after the chit-chat, it becomes a little less supportive.
It becomes a kind of deadly fantasy, yeah.
And certain people are putting around the idea that Boggins is Adam doing a voice.
Don't know what that's about.
And you know, if that was the case, he could just be here now, for instance. I mean, it would be good if he was here now, but you'll notice he's not.
No.
So we can't just summon him up. In a contrived way, so...
I'm looking forward to Channel 4's forthcoming The Execution of Boggins.
Yes.
Fictional drama.
Yes.
Confusing drama. Putting both sides.
Pure hate-driven programming.
Prurient programming. Yep.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now here's a goodbye link.
Thank you. You've been wonderful. Throw me your dirty pants. I'll wash them and get them back to you. Thank you.
I really, really...
The consistency of that.
It's out of control.
I've got a little earplug, listeners, and I've teased the end of it into a point, and it's a red earplug. And, you know, in the Big British Castle, they've got kind of earplug dispensers in case you're involved with a loud show and your ears might be hurt, and they wouldn't want to contravene health and safety guidelines on hearing protection. So you've got the little earplugs, and I'm using it as a nipple.
Adam's pressed it against his hooded top in the same position as one assumes his nipple is, beneath his layers of clothing. And now he's teasing and tweaking it. And he turned to me and said, "Is this sexy?" And I mean, the thing is, listeners, it really is.
It is a little bit, isn't it?
I'm having to pretend it isn't.
Have you ever had a saucy dream about me?
No, I don't think I have, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I've had one about
you. I know, you keep telling me repeatedly.
It scarred me, though. It absolutely scarred me. Even though I'm 100% pro...
No, you're not.
...homoeroticism.
Oh,
I am.
That's what I thought you were going to say. You were 100% straight.
Oh, yeah, no.
No,
by no means.
Definitely not.
No, I'm bendy, and I like a bit of homoeroticism. I really do. But this was going too far.
I mean, don't want to know about it.
My dream was...
Don't tell me about
shocking.
It. Listen, I tell you what you can do. Here's a thing you can do.
Yeah.
Once I've gone, in fact, why don't I just step out and you tell the audience what your dream was?
It's too dirty.
You couldn't even sort of paraphrase it.
All right, yeah. Okay.
And I swear to you, I will never listen to this bit of the podcast ever. Okay, so I'm going to step out. Right, in the future, I'm going to now switch this off and jump forward. Okay, bye.
Okay, he's going out there.
going out the room like Boggins. Okay, door closed.
So obviously I can't be completely explicit because it was a filthy dream, listeners. But basically, I dreamt that I was lying naked with Joe. And I mean, there's really nothing I can say. We did it, right? And I, in the dream, I sort of realized what was happening. And I looked down and it was Joe's face. And even in the dream, I thought, what? This is... Oh! And I woke up and I just felt insane, like absolutely soiled. I didn't know what the hell was going on with my mind. Because it's not... I like Joe, you know, he's really nice and everything, but that is not how I feel about him. So I do not know what combination of strange food I'd eaten that evening to produce that dream. Or you might think, maybe there are subconscious reasons I had that. I don't know. Either way, I'm scarred and it'll stay with me forever. Let's get Joe back in now. Here he comes. There we go. I've got it off my chest.
I was looking at James Sterling's face there through the soundproof glass, and there was some amusement, a certain amount of revulsion and discomfort. So, but I'm never going to hear that. And if you ever meet me in the outside world, listeners, you'll have a bit of privileged information that I don't know about.
They'll tell you now.
Well, they're not allowed to.
They'll try.
I don't want to hear. I never want to hear it.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, that's it, listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in for another podcast. As usual, we've really appreciated reading all your messages that we get during the live show and throughout the week. And we do make an effort to read every single one. But, man, it is hard sometimes. It's difficult. So please do keep trying to keep them short.
Keep on keeping them short.
Keep on keeping them short.
But we really appreciate every single missive, even the ones that are rude.
A little bit rude. I don't like the really rude ones.
There aren't any really rude ones.
Yeah, but even the ones where you can tell they're a bit angry or chippy. Oh, like someone told us off. Someone told us off because they thought that we'd put down.
Oh, yeah, but then.
Yeah, well, that was it was wonderful. Someone sent in a message saying, I didn't like the way you put down the guy who sent in a story about going down a slide at Centre
Park. And we weren't putting him down. We were just amused by the fact that nothing happened in the story.
Absolutely. And we were just chuckling about
it. Anyway, this listener really took us to task for it and said, you know, usually you're quite amicable and you and other DJs are rude about people and that's what I like about you. But then the next email up was an apology for it and retracting it.
He said, I would like to withdraw the last email. It was a few days later, in fact.
Was it?
He'd thought about it and he said, I wish to retract my last email. In retrospect, it was a bit pompous. I would like to think that we are the only show that has that kind of
That takes strength of character.
It really does.
Yeah.
So God bless you, whoever you were, and God bless you all, listeners, even if you don't believe in God. A fictional God blesses you. Boggins blesses you. Have a wonderful week. Take care.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Went a bit wrong there. I love you, bye! That's what I meant.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
I love Christmas, it's coming up soon. We're going to be in December, not in June. Christmas time is a time for cheer. Come over here and join me.
Yeah.